Sahanavavatu, sahanaubhunaktu, sahaviryam karavavahai, tejasvinavadhitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
Let's chant from verse 18 down to 22. One section, that doesn't mean we'll get through it all, but it is one section. And we've been through it before in Tetra Bodha, so I think that we can possibly do it. See.
Tama pradhana prakrtehe.
Tamah pradhana prakritehe
tat bhogayeshwaratmyaya
tat bhogayeshwaratmyaya
viyat pavanate jombu
viyat pavanate jombu
bhuvo bhutani jagmire
bhuvo bhutani jagmire
Satvam Shaiv Pancha Vishtesham
Satvam Shaiv Pancha Vishtesham
Krama Dhindriya Panchakam
Krama Dhindriya Panchakam
Shrotratvak Akshirasana
Shrotratvak Akshirasana
Grana Kyamupajayate
Granakyamupajayate
Tairantakaranam sarvaihi
Tairantakaranam sarvaihi
Vritti bhedena tatvidha
Vritti bhedena tatvidha
Manovimarsharupam syat
Manovimarsharupam syat
Buddhisya nischayatmika
Buddhisya nischayatmika
Rajom shai pancha vishtesham
Rajom shai pancha vishtesham
Kramat karmendriyani tu
Kramat karmendriyani tu
Vak pani pada payu
Vakani pada payu kastha
Abhidhanani jagnire
Abhidhanani jagnire
Tai sarvai sahitai pranaha
Tai sarvai sahitai pranaha
Vritti bhedatsa panchadha
Vritti bedatsa panchadha
Pranopanasamanascha
Pranopanasamanascha
Udhanavyanavchate punaha
Udhanavyanavchate punaha
So from 13 to 18, if we remember, the Prakriti was divided, the Prakriti, which is really the Maya, was divided into Maya and Avidya, where the Maya is viewed as the taking this Maya and Avidya, these two words for the Prakriti. One is from the standpoint of Ishvara, who is Sarvajnaha. And that means that when the Maya comes into manifestation, it's predominantly sattva. So it's vishuddhi, sattva vishuddhi, it's pure sattva. Whereas when we say avidya, when we look at Maya as avidya, just kind of the other side, it means the sattva is avishuddhi, means that it's combined with rajas and tamas as the sukshma sharira. And so what is Maya for Ishvara, having only the vikshepa, is avarana. Vikshepa means the projecting capacity. It's avarana. It has the covering capacity for the jiva because of the mixture of the sattva, rajas, and tamas, the avishuddhi. Avishuddhi means the impurity, impure sattva. So that was verse 18. And just in verse 18, he said, he talked about Ishvara as being really the chit atma, reflected in the Maya, that chit atma, which has the Maya, so consciousness itself, as the bimba of the Maya. If you say the sattva shuddhi, that which is pure sattva, it's the consciousness, the conscious being, that is reflected in that sattva shuddhi. So the conscious being, the atma of that Maya, having, is what we call Sarvajnaha Ishvara, having that Maya under its control. What they're trying to do is not so that you don't think that Ishvara is just the reflection in the Vishuddha, in the pure sattva. That reflection is Ishvara. Ishvara is me, is the conscious being, and then when me, myself, reflect from whom this whole Maya Upadhi comes into manifestation, then I become the conscious being with this Maya under my control, become Ishvara. So it's not that Ishvara is only the reflection, and it's not that I, the jiva, am only the limited reflection. I am the atma, I am the self, with the avishuddhi, the impure Maya, that we call avidya. So that's why they say maya, amaya bimbaha. Bimba means the object that is reflected. So the object that is reflected is myself, right? So myself with that total Maya Upadhi, with the pure, reflecting the pure sattva, I become Sarvajnaha Ishvara. So the consciousness with this Maya Upadhi becomes Sarvajnaha, all-knowing, omniscient, Ishvara. Okay? And so that was the verse 16. And then in verse 17, they're talking about the avidya, the jiva, who is subject to the avidya, because in a way on the other side of Maya, once this Maya comes, then you're an object within Maya, this body, mind, sense organs. It's avishuddhi sattva, avishuddhi, the impure sattva, because it's mixed with the rajas and tamas. Then that becomes the karana sharira. That avidya becomes the karana, causal body, for both the jiva and the Ishvara. But when we're talking about it for the jiva, we call it the jiva prajnaha. Prajnaha is the one who is Brahman, who is the self with ajnanam. And so if you think of the Maya Upadhi coming into manifestation, and now from the standpoint of avidya, when the Maya, the karana, causal body, comes into manifestation, then the consciousness, me, my own self, because now of the manifestation of these upadis, the sukshma sharira and the causal, and the stula sharira, the subtle body and the and the physical body, I become a knower because of those upadis. I gain knowership. So prajna, who is just me, myself, with that karana sharira, that pure avidya. Then when that avidya, which is Maya from the jiva standpoint, comes into manifestation, then I become a knower. In the dream, I am the knower. There's a subject-object relationship in the dream. There's a subject-object relationship in the waking state. So prajna, the one who is really just my being, myself, with the avidya, now becomes a knower in the dream state and in the waking state. So that's what's being said here. Now we're talking about this causal condition, the Maya itself, coming into manifestation as Hiranyagarbha Tejasa. Hiranyagarbha is what we call that subtle condition. Sukshma Sharira for Ishwara is Hiranyagarbha, the subtle body. Sukshma Sharira for the Jiva is called Tejasa. And then that again goes in through a process of grossification called Panchikarana, becoming fivefold. And then we call the same Ishwara, just giving another name to it, it's the same Ishwara, it's the same self, the same Ishwara in the causal condition, then Hiranyagarbha, then Virat. And then from the standpoint of the Jiva, it's Tejasa, right? It's Prajna, Tejasa, and Vishwa. These are the names, you know. So now we have to redo this. We did this in Tattva Bodha. Now we're going to do this process of creation in the way that Vidyaranya does it in Chapter 1. So that's why this is familiar to you. We'll just have another opportunity to memorize it, to really learn it, so that you have this in your mind to play with. So here, what it says, so remember, Prakriti is the name for Maya. So we have Prakriti as the material, which we call Maya. And that Prakriti, it becomes twofold in terms of Maya and Avidya. So if you use the language like this, the Prakriti, this material, becomes as though twofold, Maya and Avidya. It's just Maya, that which has the projecting power for Ishwara. That same Maya, that same Prakriti, acts as Avidya for the Jiva. So here he says, so how is this creation going? How does it happen? What happens now to the Prakriti to become all of this? So first line, Tamah Pradana Prakritehe. So from the Prakriti, taking the Prakriti, which is comprised of Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas. Prakriti Maya is Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas. So looking at the Prakriti now, coming into manifestation, initially it's the subtle elements which are actually the manifestation of Tamas. Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas, Maya first manifests in terms of the subtle body. So when that subtle body is manifest, subtle body means the subtle body of Ishwara as Hiranyagarbha, the subtle body of the Jiva as Tejasa. So when the creation comes in first into manifestation, it comes into manifestation as the five subtle elements, which would be what? Space, air, fire, water, earth. If we're looking at just the manifestation of the elements, we say that's predominantly the tamoguna, tamas, which is involved in just the manifestation of the elements themselves. Okay. So he says, tamah pradana prakritehe tad bhogaya. So from the prakriti, with the predominance of tamas, because we're going to have predominance of sattva and predominance of rajas also, but it's just the tamas aspect. Why does it come into manifestation? Tad bhogaya. For the enjoyment of prajna. Because we're now doing the whole thing, but for the enjoyment of prajna. Prajna, as we'll see, needs a sukshma sharira and a causal body. So this whole, all of it comes into manifestation as the five subtle elements. But then, he says, for the enjoyment of tat, of prajna, Ishwara Agnya, by the command of Ishwara, I'll talk about this in a minute, so for the enjoyment of prajna, for the bhoga, for the experience of prajna, and then at the command, Agnya means command, so Ishwara Agnya, by the command of Ishwara, for the enjoyment of prajna, which is the jiva, the atma with the agnanam, for the enjoyment of the jiva, viet, space, pavana, air, wind, tejas, fire, ambu, water, bhuvaha, the earth. So there's different names they do. Right? So here, viet, space, pavana, wind, tejas, fire, ambu, water, bhuvaha, the prithvi, the earth. These bhutas, jagnire, are born. These bhutas come into being. Okay? Jagnire. So, two things to know here. in for this Agya of what do we mean by the command of Ishvara? In the Taittiriya Upanishad, they have an order for what begins the creation. So how they say this is Ishvara first sees. There's that ikshana, there's the scene. That's the agnya. Say you're coming out of deep sleep for the pragna, for the jiva. You're coming out of deep sleep. The first thing that happens is you see it. That see it is the agnya. You come into being a being who has this form. So the first scene agnya is the scene, the coming into manifestation, and from that point of awareness, from that point the creation, you know, has a ripple effect and goes through its process of manifestation. So it's not like there's a little man in what I'm trying to get rid of the idea that there's some little man in heaven. Heaven's not there yet. Heaven's in unmanifest condition. There's no space there for a little man to be sitting on his throne looking down at all of us, you know. And so what do they mean by agnya? Because it's everything is in what we would call for Ishvara nirvikalpa samadhi, because there's no agnanam there. And so when the maya is in its unmanifest condition without the agnanam, without being a covering of everything, it's equated to nirvikalpa samadhi, when you're just abiding with yourself, or what we bring it to from our standpoint, nirvikalpa samadhi, where there's no subject-object relationship, there's just me. When you go to sleep and you're in that prajna, that is yourself with agnanam, because there's only yourself there. But the maya itself is in a causal condition. Kadana, that's why it's called kadana sharira. It's in its causal condition from which the dream state and the waking state come. And that means that prajna becomes, as the creation comes into manifestation, prajna becomes a knower. Before that, the experience is just my being without knowing anything. No subject-object differentiation. That is different when your mind is awake and goes into samadhi. What samadhi means is a meditative state, you know, as we're meditating and the mind, you know, is just turned toward myself and it doesn't have any distractions. Then when the mind is just because of self-knowledge, it can turn toward me. I can become its object of focus. Then the awake mind has no other content other than me. Whereas, so the awake mind, the vritti, is as though a perfect mirror just of myself without any objectification of maya. So it's as though the maya is just sitting in myself. So the content of the vritti is only me, so there's no subject-object relationship there, because the one that's illumining the vritti is not different from the one who's the subject of the vritti, the content of the vritti. So at that time, you're just abiding by yourself. That maya is there in unmanifest condition as an atisukshma vritti. It's not exactly unmanifest. It's called avyakta. It's not manifest in terms of any objectification, but it's only knowledge, right? Whereas in deep sleep, it's only ajnanam. So that's a different experience, because one, there's nothing known from the standpoint of the vritti, but in the samadhi experience, it's just a complete shining of myself. So I am completely known. There's no agnanam there from the standpoint of the maya upadhi. So what illumines the upadhi and what is the content of what illumines the vritti and the content of the vritti are one and the same. Whereas in deep sleep, the prajna, what illumines the vritti is me, same me, that illumines the dream and the dream and the waking state, as well as the samadhi. It's the same exact self. But from the standpoint of maya, what is there is ajnanam. The prajna, the universe, is or the jiva, is totally in, you know, unmanifest condition, which we call karana sharira. The karana sharira is avidya, it's ajnanam. So you can see there's a difference. One, the content of the vritti is ajnanam. The other, the content of the vritti is knowledge. Right? It's my own self. But the nature of the self is the most pure, in a sense, with the prajna, right? Because I'm not identified with anything there. The ajnanam is in my way, so to speak, but there's no false identification. The ajnanam puts a damper on myself, because I am illumining ajnanam. So the vritti ajnanam is something that is experienced, but there's no ignorance really in terms of myself, and there's no, what do you call it, superimposition going on there caused by the awake mind or the body, mind, sense organs to take myself to be that. So anyway, now what happens when the creation becomes awake, okay, wakes up, when Ishvara wakes up, why does Ishvara wake up? Why does all of a sudden he open up? They give in the Shruti, just because somebody's going to ask this question, what causes Ishvara to wake up? They will say, well, what causes you to wake up? So they make this thing. What causes you to wake up? Say you're in really deep, you're deep in deep sleeping, right? Everything's in causal condition. You know, like you can be, others can be in the room, they can be talking, there can be music playing, there can be an earthquake outside. And you don't wake up, you know? You wake up, somebody tells you there was an earthquake in the middle of the night. Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't wake up for that. You know? So you're in this deep sleep condition, sense organs, mind, all in their causal condition, you know? Why do you wake up? Why do you wake up? And so the answer is just a question that it comes in the Brahma Sutras, I think. So why do you, what wakes you up? And so one answer is, it's your prarabdha. It's your karmas. It's time for your karmas have to wake up. There's things you have to do. So the prarabdha karma, your karmas actually wake you up. It's time for you to wake up now. You can't just go to sleep and stay asleep. These other things have to be experienced. And so the prarabdha karmas themselves will wake you up. So that's for the jiva. That's one thing they say. From the standpoint of Ishvara, what do they say? Yeah. The collective karmas of all of the jivas are what caused the creation to come back into being. Now we're talking about the kalpas. The collective karmas of all of the jivas are what cause, or are what are the impetus to bring the creation back into manifestation. So there's a little nudging there. These answers are negated later on. They're just kind of helpful answers. You know, helpful and give you some meaning. Why does Ishvara wake up? And you know, what is the answer for that? There's a cycle within the creation, you know, and that cycle of within the creation is manifesting. The cycle is manifesting. You can say, well, why is it manifesting like that? Then you have to make up a reason. So we say these reasons. It has its own logic, its own sense to it. Like when we say, well, what wakes you up? Well, it's your karma. Wakes you up, you know. The fact is that you wake up. You know? When you're ready to wake up, you wake up. You know? And you can say it's because of the prarabdha karma wakes you up. For Ishvara, why does Ishvara come out of that samadhi? In fact, why do you come out of samadhi? Say you as a jiva, you're in nirvikalpa samadhi. There's just only you. Everything is resolved into you. It's non-dual from your own perspective. There is only you. There's nothing else at all. All the whole upadhi is totally resolved just into your being. Why do you come out? You can be in nirvikalpa samadhi for 10 seconds, 15 seconds, or 5 hours, or several days, like Ramana. What brings you out? You know? So a convenient answer, you know, that just requires shraddha, actually, is it's your karma. The karma brings you out, you know. Maybe somebody shaking you brings you out. And you can say it's your karma to be shaken, whatever. But you have to just understand that this is the situation. A jiva goes through waking state, dream state, deep sleep state. You come out of your dream too. You know, waking state, you go to sleep. Come out of your dream, you go into the waking state. This is a cycle that we find ourselves in. For Ishvara, this is a cycle that Ishvara finds himself in. Why I say this is because the creation is beginningless. Ishvara is not a little man who created the creation. That's a, you know, Ishvara, God in heaven, created the creation. If Bhagavan created the creation, then you can say, you know, you really could have done better. You could have created this creation so we didn't have to suffer as much as we do. Then he goes, yeah, but then you wouldn't have free will and all of this. But this, it's a non-issue. Ishwar did not create the creation because the creation is beginningless. Brahman was not created because Brahman is timeless. Brahman is timeless, Maya is timeless, Ishwar is beginningless, so where's the creation? It's just a matter of this is what it is, you know, and this is how it always been, has been. Yourself, this self, there's no cause-effect relationship here. Like you can't say, we might as well get into this now, I guess. Okay. we can't say, you know, why is there Brahman? Whose idea was that? Why is there Brahman? Why is the basis of everything just non-dual conscious being? What caused that? What brought that about? You know? That nothing caused it, and nothing brought it about. It's free from time. And so it was nobody's idea. And it is nobody's idea. If something that is free from time simply is, then it has no cause. Because it's changeless and timeless. So where's the cause going to be for that? Who's going to create that? And also cause, it's timeless, it's free of time and space, it's non-dual. For yourself, from the standpoint of yourself, there's no mind to say, why don't we create a creation? You need a mind for that, you know? Or let me build it myself, you know? You need tools. Let me find some material to build it up. There is no material. There's no material at all. There's just me, conscious being. So I'm not caused. I'm the uncaused cause. But you can say that, like in some philosophies, you know, that I'm the uncaused cause. But actually, I also don't cause anything. From my standpoint, I am the vivarta upadana karana. I am the material cause of everything, but I myself have never gone through any kind of change. So that for there to be any type of cause at all, you need Maya. You know? But Brahman, who is really the material cause of everything that is, has no form at all and is free from time. And so how did Maya get created then? Maya from which the whole creation comes, that we've established it as Maya because as you analyze the effect, so is the cause. If the effect itself, and analyzing the effect, you find that everything comes into being and goes out of being, it's bordered by non-existence, because it has a prior condition, right, of not being. And it has a posterior condition of not being. That's one reason it has to be Maya. There's no way around that, because it comes into being and goes out of being. It's time-bound. And then if you analyze, you know, to try to find something here, again, you can't find it. It's infinitely divisible. It goes into an infinite regress. So we find that this creation, just as the Shastra itself says, is Maya, Yama Iti Maya. It has no being of its own, right? That which has no being of its own is Maya, which means then where does it get its being? The being is the Adhishtana. For whatever is Mitya, that has no being of its own, must have an Adhishtana. I am the Adhishtana. Conscious being is the Adhishtana. So there's so much logic for all of that. But then you ask, okay, so Maya, who created Maya? Who was there to create Maya? Right, there's no answer. Well done. No answer. What's the answer to that? It has to be beginningless because who's going to create it? Brahman can't create it. Mm-hmm. It has no being of its own. So Brahman is its only being. So what has no being of its own can't create itself. Because it's really not there from its own standpoint. Yeah. It's there only because Brahman is there. Because Brahman is the Satchit of Maya. So there is no creation of Maya. Maya is, you know. And then, if you say, according to the Shastra, this creation is a manifestation of Brahman with Maya. So it comes into manifestation. Maya is beginningless because nobody created it. And it has for its Adhishtana Brahman. So Maya was never created. And so if Maya is the cause of this creation, when was the first one? When was the first creation? If the creation is cyclical, when was the first one? Brahman is timeless. Maya is beginningless because uncreated. And so is it going to, from the causal condition, make a decision? It's in causal condition, totally unmanifest, and it decides, oh, let's start the creative process right now. No. Mm-hmm. That manifestation, dissolution, so, you know, Srishti comes into manifestation. Stiti stays for whatever the kalpas are, kalpa is, whatever length it is. And then Laya, it goes into unmanifest, from beginningless time, because there's no beginning. So you say it has been going through this process from beginningless time. Okay, so now you say, why has it been doing that? Why has it been doing that? What is the cause? Whose idea was it? There was no cause. Because there was no cause because the cause is beginningless. So what kind of cause is that? There's no first beginning to the cycle. There's no beginning to the cycle. So there's no cause. Why is Ishwara like Ishwara is? Why did he do it this way? It's creation is beginningless. The cycle is beginningless. Brahman does nothing. Ishwara is you. You just simply are. You're not doing anything at all. Maya is involved in this beginningless cycle. And Maya, as Maya projects, then Brahman, myself, as its Adhishtana, allows this, it's because of I am the Adhishtana, I am consciousness itself, this creation, right, the sattva, because the Maya is sattva, rajas, tamas, the sattva reflects consciousness, so the creation is known. So Ishwara is just Brahman with this Maya capacity, you know, to come into manifestation. As it comes into manifestation, it is known. For Ishwara, when it's not in manifestation, which is just in its causal condition, then that's Ishwara just abiding as myself with this Maya Upadhi and causal condition. That's what we call the Nirvikalpa. I am just conscious being with this Maya in its causal condition, without Ajnanam. And so, from that Nirvikalpa state, this creation has its own rhythm. In the Vedas, they call that rhythm like breathing. They liken it to breathing, like Bhagavan's breath. You know, they also talk about the coming of the Vedas as the breath of Bhagavan. You know, because there's a rhythm there. You know, exhale, inhale, exhale, inhale, exhale, inhale. It's like the breath of Bhagavan. Sometimes it's also it's likened to a day, the whole creation, like a day, one going through all of the yugas, the four yugas, like one day in the life of Brahmaji, of Ishwara, one day in the life of going through these yugas, starting so fresh and clean, becoming, you know, a little tired in the early afternoon, a little more tired in the third yuga, and really out of it in the fourth yuga. That's us now. So they have these stories, these metaphors, these understandings to try to make you visualize the creation. But where we can get into trouble is with our why question. Because often for us, in this era, the scientific era, you know, you should be able to, if something is true and you know what you're talking about, you should be able to, if you say, why is Ishwara doing that? Or why did the creation turn out to be like this? We should have an answer. You know? But you should only be able to have an answer to those questions within duality, where there is time, where there is a cause-effect sequence. Once you're beyond time, once you're beyond duality, then there is no cause-effect sequence. And so then how you have to deal with these questions, like the nature of the self as being free from time, that requires a pramana to hold up a mirror to who you are as the very adhishtana of time and space itself. You have to recognize that. Once you recognize that, then these questions, why am I here? Why is Brahman here? Why is that? When there's no time and no space, can that question be answered? Is there an answer to the question? The answer to the question is there is no answer to that question because it's an inappropriate question. It's an inappropriate question because that question can only be answered within time and space where there is cause and effect. But for that which is me, the me that is totally free from time and space, there is no reason. There can be no reason because there is no second thing to come and do something to create this non-dual timeless self. So you get, with Vedanta, with the Upanishads, you get to the bottom line of things. If you're looking at what is bottom line, means there's no further that you can go. And there's nobody there to answer, oh, this is why this happened and this is why that happened. There is no answer to that. Because conscious being is non-dual and free from time and space. So you can make up answers from within the creation. You can make things up, you know. But you're just making it up, mm-hmm. you know. Because people don't want to go. The mind is resistant to going to that which is before time and space. You know? Or what is the nature of Maya before the creation? And where does Maya, because from Maya comes the whole time-space creation. Where is Maya? Where is it located? And you have to say it's located in Brahman. Why? Why would it be located in Brahman? Because there's nothing else but Brahman. It's either Brahman or non-existence. And when we see this Maya, it is known. Bleeps of Ananda, bleeps of Ananda. So the what we call the material cause of this Maya is not non-existence. If the material cause was non-existence, then what comes from non-existence? What experiences can come from non-existence? Non-existent experiences. Non-existent universe comes from non-existent cause. And we don't experience this universe, or my Isupati is non-existent. Nor would there be anybody there to experience it, right? Say both the Jiva and Ishwara, you know, you say, well, what's their cause? It's non-existence. Do you mean that they come from non-existence? That's the Upadana Karana. Their material cause is not the Satchitatma, it's the Asat. It's non-existent. Can something come from what is not there? So the basis of everything that is, the basis of all that is non-existent, is non-existence. All that is. There's nothing to save you. The basis of every single thing is non-existent. Can anything come from that? It's impossible unless you're playing with the words. It's absolutely impossible, because what we mean by non-existence is that it's not there. And so this creation cannot rise out of non-existence. Right? Say if you say, now, well, Maya has no existence. That's not true. Maya is not asat. It is not absolute non-existence. Why? Because you experience it. And say you experience it, and as you experience, everything in it is. When it is there, it is. That means it has an upadana karana of being existence itself while it is there. And that is our experience. While it is there, it is known. When it's not there anymore, then it is not known. But whatever is here is and is known. It's the same with everything about your upadi. It is and is known when it is there. Your thoughts, they are known. Each thought, each vritti, it is known. It's gone, it's not anymore. It is known. The is knownness is the adhishtana. That's what we mean by adhishtana. That is the basis of the whole creation. Right? And that basis of the whole creation has to be free of those things which come into manifestation as the creation. Right? Like, for instance, you are the basis of your imagination. Right? You're the basis of your imagination. And so when the imagination comes, you remain as its basis. The imagination comes, is sustained, and it resolves. Into what? Into its reality. What is the reality? Is the Satchit, the conscious being? You know, which just remains as the Vivarta Upadana Karanam. You don't go through any change at all. As this Maya Upadi, you get to be the Ishwara of your imagination. This Maya comes into manifestation, is sustained, and resolves. While it is there, it is. When it's in unmanifest condition is. Why is it? Well, because even though it has no reality of its own, it has, because mitya, it has an adhishtana, which is its reality. But we're talking about the adhishtana, which is the reality of the entire creation. The entire creation. Not just, you know, the wood of the desk or the clay of the pot. But the adhishtana, the reality of the entire creation or of your entire imagination. That's just part of your imagination. The entire imagination enjoys such chit. Yeah. And the entire creation enjoys that same such chit. That's what we mean by adhishtana. What is mitya? Because this maya, when you analyze it, even its title, yama iti maya, it has no being of its own. But it's never away from being. That's why Ishwara is wonderful, just to be Ishwara. I am, I exist, this is my upadi, no problem. But all of the jivas, they also, I am, I exist. But I'm subject to birth, I'm subject to death, I'm subject to moods. Because total identification of ajnanam, total identification with the upadis that reflect consciousness. The sattva reflects consciousness. It is contaminated by rajas and tamas, this body, mind, sense organs. You know? So the sattva that you enjoy in terms of your mind and your sense organs is mixed with your body, you know, your tamas, the body, and the sense organs, and the prana, and the karmendriyas, all of these things, the rajas and tamas. And so you have a limited limitations from the standpoint of the upadi. But from the standpoint of the adhishtana, just like the maya for Ishwara totally depends on the adhishtana, on the satchit, for its being, the same adhishtana is your being. Because your being, this body, mind, sense organs, is part of the expression of maya. The pure expression of maya is Ishwara. The contaminated expression of maya is avidya. Right? So, but we're still only Ishwara. But from our own standpoint of the upadi, we have this ajnanam. Naturally, because of the limitations of the upadi. Okay? So this has to, we have to just, you know, really feel this, really see it. And then now, so for now, who knows how many of these we'll have to do. So I'll let the Ishwara. So now what is being said here is, okay, but say you want to know the process that Maya goes through as it comes into this manifestation, so that we can kind of appreciate from the Srishti, how does that Srishti take place, bringing us into Stiti? Srishti means the creation. What is the process that Maya goes through in becoming this creation? And within this creation, which includes the jiva, what is the process that the elements go through, that the maya goes through, to become the jiva, to become Ishwara, to become the jiva, which is part of Ishwara? So it's going in, that's why we're going into all of these details like we did in Tattva Bodha. If you can spend time imagining this and actually learning this whole thing so that it's just at your fingertips, it's beautiful to kind of play with that and recognize it, and recognize your participation in it, because it's a paradigm that belongs to the Shastra. It belongs to the Upanishads. And as a paradigm, it has its use. It's useful. It's useful to give you the understanding and the knowledge you need in order to let this body, mind, sense organs belong to Ishwara, to belong to Maya, and to recognize yourself as the adhishtana, not just of this jiva, upadi, but of Ishwara, of the Ishwara upadi, because the adhishtana is just one. It's the satchit atma, is the adhishtana of the whole expression of Maya. But the whole expression of Maya, there's Ishvara who has an abhimana, an identification with the whole thing, right? And then within that Maya, there's all of the jivas that have the same self, right? The self experience is absolutely the same for Ishvara or for the jiva. There's no difference whatsoever. It's the same self. You know? Think of your imagination. Do all of the characters in the imagination have different selves? No. They have only one self. And that one self is the self of Ishvara. It's the self of every character. It's the self of the trees. It's the self of the rocks. It's the self of the whole picture. It's only one self. But if in your imagination you're not the Ishvara of the imagination, you're one of the characters who are imagined, then because they don't have a sattva, they don't have a free sattva that pervades the whole imagination, as you as the Ishvara of it do, they have a contaminated sattva. It's contaminated or it's mixed with rajas and tamas. And so they experience themselves as an individual experiencing the world through these sense organs. And so in understanding this paradigm, there's many, many paradigms, there's many ways of making sense of the world, but each paradigm has a purpose. This purpose is for you to gain self-knowledge that allows you to let this body, mind, sense organs, to let the maya be maya, the ajnanam be the ajnanam, to see how all of these body, mind, sense organs, how they come into being, and how they're really not separate from Ishvara at all, and how the whole Ishvara, including all of the jivas, have only one adhishtana, which is myself. So the beautiful thing about this paradigm is absolutely everything in your experience, including the knower, knowership, consciousness, and the known, knower known, are included in this paradigm. That's what makes it important. You know, it's not like there's not an infinite number of paradigms we can have that are useful for one thing or the other. But this one is worth it for really having everything about you put in its place as really being one with Ishvara. Okay, so here. So we got 10 minutes. Okay. So here what this says, it's dealing with when the Maya first comes into manifestation. Maya, as it manifests, comes in as the manifestation of the five subtle elements. What are the five subtle elements? In this order, space, the order is important. Space, air, fire, water, earth. This order is important because space is the most subtle, you know. It only relates at all to hearing, whereas the vayu, the wind, because space can't be touched or it can't be seen or any of these things. But if you remember vayu, the wind, it can be heard and it can be touched. Right? So it's grossified in that way. I have two sense organs that can appreciate it, that can relate to it. Then the agni is the third one. It can be heard, it can be touched, it can be seen. So it's a little more grossified. Of these, they're all subtle, but this is just to understand why this order is there and understand that differentiation. Water is the next one. It can be heard, it can be touched, it can be seen, and it can be tasted. And prithivi is the last one because it can be all these first four and you can also smell it. So this is an important order, and when we kind of do this chart, we use this order and then look at the sense objects and the sense organs in this order. Okay? So he's going to say this later in terms of the karma. So now imagine the creation coming, the Maya, coming into manifestation. It comes into manifestation first just as the tamas aspect in terms of the five subtle elements. The elements themselves are tamas. Now in that tamas, we'll see the tamas elements later becoming the stula sharira into this physical world that we experience through our sense organs. But now it's just the manifestation. And so what manifests? It's the tamas aspect of Maya manifesting. It's the five subtle elements, space, air, fire, water, earth. That's it. So here, if you look, viet, space. Second line, viet, space. Pavana, wind. Air, tejaha, tejas, fire, Ambu, water. And then Bhuvaha, Prithivi, earth. Bhutani, these are the elements, space, air, fire, water, earth, Jagnyari. These are born. So when the Prakriti first comes into manifestation, these five subtle elements are born. For the enjoyment of who? For the enjoyment of the jivas. For the enjoyment of prajna. Now prajna, as Taijasa, can experience these five subtle elements, as we'll see why later. We'll do that later. And then for Hiranyagarbha, it's just the manifestation of the whole Ishwara infinite, infinite order of Ishwara from the subtle perspective. That's what we call Hiranyagarbha. We'll see more about that later. Repeat after me for this next verse. Satvam Shaihi.
Satvam Shaihi.
Panchabihi.
Panchabihi.
Tesham.
Tesham.
Pramat.
Pramat.
Di Indriya.
Di Indriya.
Panchakam.
Panchakam.
Shrotra.
Shrotra.
Twak.
Twak.
Akshi.
Akshi.
Rasana.
Rasana.
Grana.
Grana.
Akhyam.
Akhyam.
Upajayate.
Upajayate.
So now he says, Satvam Shaihi Panchabihi. So of the Prakriti, they're still talking of the Prakriti. From the subtle aspect, the sattva aspect of the five elements, right, of the five elements, space, air, fire, water, earth. So if I take, now you have to understand, the space, the five elements have come into manifestation. It's the tamas aspect that allows you just to experience the five elements. If I look at the sattva aspect of the five elements, space, air, fire, water, earth, then being sattva, reflecting consciousness, now I have the sense organs to be able to experience that. Okay, so it says, from the sattva aspect of the five elements, tesham kramat, in this order, following this order, we have di indriya panchakam, the five di indriyas. The di indriyas are the jnana indriyas, the organs of knowledge, the sense organs. So the five di indriyas, the five organs of the five sense organs, come from these five subtle elements for the sake, really, of the prajna again. And what are they? And now you have to notice the order. Shrotra comes from akasha, from viet, shrut the ears, and so forth. So twak is the sense of touch. Akshi are the eyes. Rasana is the sense of taste. Grana, the sense of smell. Akhyam means called. Okay. So these sense organs individually, coming from space, air, fire, water, earth, are what? The sense of hearing, the sense of touch, the sense of sight, the sense of taste, the sense of smell. That's what these jnanendriyas are called. Akhyam means they're called this individually. So upajayate means they are born. So they come into being. The five sense organs come into being from the sattva, from the sattva aspect of the five elements, five subtle elements. So we did this in Panchakarma. Everybody remember?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
2 minutes, we'll do one more. Taihi.
Taihi.
Antakaranam.
Antakaranam.
Sarvaihi.
Sarvaihi.
Vritti-bedena.
Vritti-bedena.
Dvidha.
Dvidha.
Mano.
Mano.
Vimarsha-rupam.
Vimarsha-rupam.
Syat.
Syat.
Buddhihi.
Buddhihi.
Syat.
Syat.
Nischyatnika.
Nischyatnika.
Okay, so you take the sattva, the sattvic aspect of the five subtle elements individually, and they become the five sense organs. But those five sense organs give you data, give the mind data. Okay, they give the content of your vrittis. So if I'm looking through my, say I'm looking at you now, I'm seeing you, I'm hearing anything that's going on, I can feel the wind, I can taste, I can smell, if there's anything there to be tasted or smelled, all of that comes into the mind together. All that data comes in together. So the mind has to be able to receive simultaneously all of that input coming in from the five sense organs. So what it says here, taihi, sarvaihi, by all of them, all five together, the antakarana, the mind is born. Okay. So by all five together, taihi, sarvaihi, all the five sattvic aspects together, the antakarana, the mind is born, and that mind comes into being, and that mind is divided into two, based upon their vritti. Beda, it says vritti bedana, it's divided according to what they do. Vritti is their activity. So here in this, like in Tetrabodha also, they divide it into manas, into the manas, into the buddhi. And then, if you remember, the chitta is really put in with the memories, put in with the manas, and the ahankara is put in the buddhi. So they're just doing it twofold. So this antakarana, which is born of the collective five subtle elements, of five subtle aspects of the five elements collectively, gives you the antakarana, which has two things, the manas and the buddhi. So here he says in the second line, so it's divided. Dvidha means divided into two. Dvidha means twofold. The manas is vimarsha-rupa syat. Vimarsha means doubt. Samshaya. Vimarsha means samshaya. Doubt. The mind has uncertainty. Is it like this or like that? It's vikalpa. It's sankalpa, vikalpa they call it. Sankalpa is, it's like this. Vikalpa, I don't think so. Sankalpa, vikalpa. Sankalpa, vikalpa. That's what we call doubt. You think it's this way? No, it might be this way. So it's unclear. It's a lack of clarity, right? So sankalpa, vikalpa. Vimarsha, called vimarsha. And then the buddhi syat. The buddhi is nischayatmika buddhi. The buddhi, these type of vrittis, have clarity. They have knowledge. They have certainty. So when we call the buddhi, for instance, the buddhi, when we're talking about the buddhi, that's where knowledge is, where clarity and certainty is. It's that type of vritti. The manas is where uncertainty is, lack of clarity, confusion, all of these things. The emotions also are reflected in the manas, as are, as are the sense perceptions. But the manas is what its own thing, in addition to the sense perception. Its own thing. Emotions, it's in addition to emotions also. So these are different types of ways that the mind can be. It can have memories, it's capable of having memories, it's capable of having the ahankara, I am doing this, I am doing that. It's capable of having the manas, which is unclarity, doubt, and the buddhi, where there is knowledge, certainty, clarity. So these are the capacities that the antakarana has. By antakarana, we mean the inner instrument, the mind. The inner instrument receives all of these data from the five sense organs, right? It receives the emotions, but it also has its own capacities that belong to it. Not that it's a receptacle of data, but it also has its own things. It's got the manas, it's got the buddhi, it's got the citta memory, it's got the ahankara, these four. And here they're only acknowledging the buddhi and the manas, and then they take these and stick them in there later. Okay. So does this sound familiar?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good. But it's not brand new again. We'll keep going through.
Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.